Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net, joined remotely yet again by my co-host on the road to nowhere, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. Hello, Charlie.
Hannah, I love the talking heads setup. As you well know, you know this, we don't live in Texas. We don't. We live in the Washington, D.C. area, the suburbs, and so we don't have it the worst. Plenty of other people have it worse than we do, but that doesn't mean I'm not tired of looking outside and seeing all the snow and ice. And this week, I'm serious, like ice. Like, we didn't even get snow this week. We got snow cone pellets that are really hard to get off your car. So I've been in the house like 3 days. No, I don't have it the worst. I don't. But don't mean I ain't tired of it.
Well, and at least we never lost electricity, so we could still watch movies.
Oh, I love the silver lining playbook there. Yeah, we did. We did not lose electricity. And speaking of movies, we have the one that it doesn't even matter what we say. Everyone has to watch it because it's already, we don't even know it's going to be nominated for an Oscar, but it is going to be nominated for like 8 to 9 Oscars. It already won Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography at the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association Awards. And has won every other award out there from every other film group. And I'm talking about Nomadland. It doesn't, Hannah, it doesn't matter what we say. Everyone has to see it because it's this year's, if you don't see it, you're out of the conversation.
Well, and I realized when I saw we were going to be talking about this movie this week is that I don't think we actually ever recapped what happened with the Washington Film Critics Awards. And so this was not, I know it won. It won a bunch of things, including Best Picture. It was not my top choice for Best Picture, but I knew it was in the running. It was certainly in my top five. I knew the nomination was going to be there. And so for that very reason, yes, everyone needs to see Nomadland, because even if it's not necessarily your cup of tea, you can't go wrong watching Frances McDormand traipsing around the American West in an RV, meeting really interesting people. It's very observational drama type of stuff. But it's just not a conventional movie in the sense that you watch a very a narrative that's very easy to track. It's the story is a little more meandering, just like what you're going through, what you're experiencing as Frances McDormand's character does here. So I agree, doesn't really matter. It's worth seeing in order to be in the know and to fill out those Oscar ballots come April.
Out of everyone that I know that has seen Nomadland, which is everybody in the film circles, you like it the least. Everybody likes it more than you do.
I don't think so. I didn't like it least.
And I know you didn't hate it. I certainly liked it more than you did. And I think it's making a connection with audiences. And it's hard to explain why. So Frances McDormand, she plays Fern. This is based on a nonfiction book of what happened to the town of Empire, Nevada. Empire was built around, it's a company town. It was built around a gypsum mine and a sheetrock plant. And those closed. And when that closed, all the jobs are gone. And Empire, Nevada ceased to function as a town. So as Fern said, she's not homeless. She is houseless. She makes the choice. She's a very recent widow. She makes the choice to move into her van. She names it Vanguard. Love that name, by the way. And she joins this community that she didn't really know existed, nomads, if you will. They live in their vans or whatever vehicles they have, and they create their own ad hoc communities. She attends like an annual gathering. His name's Bob Wells. He's in the film. There are real nomads like Linda May and Swanky. They're real nomads who play versions or maybe even themselves in this film, and they're lovely. They're fascinating to watch, and they talk about the culture. They never say goodbye. They say, we'll see you down the road. And we see Fern's existence. She works during Christmas time at the Amazon Fulfillment Center. I think a lot of them do. And in the summer, they hop from like national park jobs. That's where we meet Dave, played by David Strathairn, who takes a shine to Fern. And Fern's like, hey, I know I'm not in the market, but I'll humor you. We can chat. And that's probably where Nomadland takes its more fictional route. Fern's relationship with Dave. Fern's got to make a choice. Do I want to do this the rest of my life? Do I want to settle down, recreate the semblance of a normal life, or do I want to keep going? And that is where you didn't care for the non-narrative structure. It's more episodic. Let's look at this vista. Let's look at this landscape. Let's look at Fern looking at this landscape. And there's not a lot of plot. Right. But I think the rest of the world, enjoyed Chloe Zhao's direct, you know, the director, formerly of The Writer. Remember The Writer? We talked about that. Mm-hmm. And she adapted the book into a screenplay. Enjoyed the non-standard narrative structure of this film.
Yeah, well, you like The Writer more than I did, I remember. I enjoyed The Writer as well, but it's that same sort of hybrid documentary drama kind of film where you are actually talking about, you incorporate real people with actors. So you have actors and non-actors sort of working together, and it works in some cases. In other cases, I think it brings you out. It takes you out of the moment when you just have that dichotomy of real versus not. Some of the things I did love about it, I think it's a good pandemic era film. It's very contemplative. It makes you think about material things and what you can live with and live without. I am a huge road tripper. You know, I have driven cross country several times. I love, you know, pulling off a vista and just kind of alternating the plan, you know, the path not taken. If there's a sign that says, you know, pull off here, Vista Point, I'm there. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. It made me really just crave travel again. But at the same time, it also made me realize that, you know, there's a difference. Different people like traveling different ways. And I would miss indoor plumbing way too much
to I'm not
take
saying,
this Nomadland path.
I don't know if Chloe and Fern and Linda May are saying, you need to join us. I don't think they're advocating for their lifestyle.
Yeah.
I think, if anything, Chloe Zhao is saying, first of all, there is this lifestyle. There's this subculture. This exists. And she doesn't really get into it, but especially through dialogue, but maybe through cinematography, she's showing why it exists. This is our people who've been shut out of the normal American economy and almost have been forced to do this.
It's a tough call. I mean, the cinematography for me definitely was probably number one for me in my list, but it's just the overall movie. It's just different strokes kind of thing. So while I appreciate that contemplative nature, it made me think about certain things and you just sort of, it's observational and more of a sense that you just kind of, you are along for this ride. I'm glad I took the trip. But it just, to me, it's not the best film of the year. It's probably, it's right up there, but it's apples and oranges for me when you're looking at what your favorite movies are.
Was this cinematic vegetables for you?
This was a combination. I mean, I liked the visuals enough that it was cinematic vegetables with a light dessert at the end.
I hear your cat.
My cat just jumped onto the desk.
All right. So folks, it really doesn't, everyone's raving about Nomadland. Doesn't matter if we love it or hate it. You have to see it.
Absolutely.
All right. Break. Now for something completely different. Silk Road. Do you
Not
remember?
Completely different. Not completely different because again, fiction, truth, blend.
Oh, let's talk about blend. Yeah. Let's talk about the truth. There was a website called Silk Road. I remember when it was always in the news because this was the Amazon drug place. You can go online if you know how to get on the Onion Router and Tor and use Bitcoin. You can go buy, I don't know, pick your poison. You can anything from the low end from marijuana all the way up to the like LSD and meth and mescaline. And I mean, you name it, you could go on Silk Road and buy it.
I don't know. You really know your drugs there, Charlie.
I don't know what you're talking about. this is the story of like the Mark Zuckerberg wannabe, who's a libertarian, and he wants you to know he's a libertarian. He'll, you know, spend his time at the bar telling you about the tenets of libertarianism and his manifestos. And he's from Austin, Texas, and he says, I'm going to change the world. And this is how he chose to change the world. He taught himself to code and made a Silk Road website because he does not like the government. He thinks every transaction you make outside the government weakens the government. And, oh man, that does nothing to help Silk Road's attractiveness as a film. Break, that's 50% of the film. There's 50% more of the film of another guy, a DEA agent, Rick Bowden, played by Jason Clarke. You know him from Mudbound, Terminator Genesis.
Zero Dark Thirty.
He's an undercover guy. He's a narc. He embeds himself with cartels and kingpins, and he didn't do a very good job last time. And maybe he did such a good job, he just got out of rehab, in fact. And he's been put on cybercrimes, and he doesn't know how to turn on a computer, left-click a mouse. I mean, this is 2011. This ain't 1991. I hated that part of the movie. Like, there's this montage of him watching a video that says, what is the internet? Here's how to left-click the mouse. And he can't do it. He's screwing up. And that's just the laziest writing I've ever seen. Like, I don't care how out Agent Bowden is. He knows how to left-click a mouse. He ain't that stupid. So Silk Road, it didn't do it for me. I don't think it accomplished its mission of, I don't know, being sympathetic towards Silk Road creator. Maybe just an earnest kid who got off the tracks, or an agent who's trying to nail this kid but starts to empathize with the kid a little bit. Silk Road is a mess.
Well, it starts out with a disclaimer. So it sets you up for how is this all going to work, because it says, this story is true, except for what we made up or changed. Well, they are right there. They are establishing that they are going to take creative license, dramatic license, in order to turn the story, which is based on a Rolling Stone article, into a crime thriller. Well, this just has no thrills. That's really the biggest problem, is that you don't get invested enough in any of these particular characters. They aren't sympathetic enough in any regard. When the highlight is finding somebody's IP address, you know, for the majority of people, that's not going to be your most thrilling moment. For computer geeks, perhaps. But for me, it was just sort of like, I was waiting for the hook, something to really make me care and feel a particular way about one or the other of these characters. And so, but I was not as familiar with, like, I think I vaguely remember the references to Silk Road and the drug and the bust of the founder of Silk Road. But this all happened between like 2011 to 2013. And you're right. I mean, anyone in the cyber crimes unit should absolutely know how to left click a mouse, right click a mouse. But it's also worth pointing out, though, that whereas the character relating to the real names are being used, so you have the founder of Silk Road, Ross Ulbricht, played by Nick Robinson. He is who he is. But I read the director's statement, and he says that the Bowden character is actually a composite of a bunch of crooked cops that whose stories he just wanted to tell. And so there's something, I don't know, that just doesn't work for me when I know that that's happening, that that's the case. I love Nick Robinson. I loved and like Love, Simon. It was really fascinating for me to go, where do I know this kid from? And to see that he's kind of growing into these more adult roles. And Jason Clarke, I always like, but his characters always just sort of seem to be just different versions of the same kind of character. But I enjoyed watching both of them. I just think that in this particular case, the material fails them. They don't, you know, not so much failing the material.
I'm on board that the material fails them. I'm not as on board with Nick Robinson. I don't think he was no Jesse Eisenberg as Zuckerberg. There's two manifestos in this film. So we talked about libertarianism, which really takes a front seat for whatever reason. But Jason Clarke, agent, composite character Agent Bowden, has a manifesto too. He is anti-millennial. And I'm not defending millennials. I'm not a millennial. I'm that old.
You're close.
I am the world's youngest Gen X, by the way. I squeak right in there. He says these millennials do not understand, do not value experience and the wisdom that comes along with experience and being old and getting in the streets and getting your hands dirty. He believes the only way to take down Silk Road is human sources and squeezing informants. Computers won't get you there. IP addresses won't get you there, which is technically proven wrong in the end. But his screed, his other form of libertarianism, just which doesn't even match. It's not even a mirror. Usually their viewpoints would at least collide or deflect or reflect. They have nothing to do with one another. Libertarianism has nothing to do with being a Luddite. The script has nothing to do with itself. It's like two different films in the same film, and none of it works.
Yeah, no, I agree. It needed a major polish, especially if you're going to say that you're taking liberties with the truth, then at least make the fictional part more compelling. But also, I did read that there's a 2015 documentary that I don't recall seeing about the Silk Road cyber marketplace called Deep Web. And so apparently that's narrated by Keanu Reeves. So I think if you really want to sort of get more about this story and listen to Keanu Reeves, that one may be a little more compelling. And I think you can find that on Amazon Prime.
All right. I know I already said now something completely different, but now I really mean it. Now I really, really mean it, because you can go on your television today if you are a subscriber to Disney Plus, but if you have children, you are, and you can watch Flora and Ulysses. Flora is a 10-year-old, played by the adorable Matilda Lawler. Ulysses is not human. Ulysses is a squirrel. Ulysses gets run over by one of those artificially intelligent vacuum cleaners, and on the other side, he's not talking, but he's got, like, squirrel superpowers. Like, he can fly, and he has super strength, and little Flora, she knows about superheroes. She's a comic book nerd, because her dad is a failed comic book writer, and mom is like this author of bodice rippers. I love her book covers are all over the wall, and they're really funny. And they're in Splitsville right now. They are separated, and so Flora has this a lot of voiceover, and she's explaining to you why she's a cynic. Really big thoughts for a 10-year-old, but she's like, I'm a cynic, and the world sucks, and blah 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 blah. But she latches on to Ulysses. She's like, we're gonna find out what your purpose is. And through that becomes this adventure of supporting characters, which is so much fun in this film, finding who's going to play what little bit part, and watching Flora, who's so cinematic and so commands the screen. She's really good.
She's a great actress.
But, I mean, there's a reason this was never going to be released in theaters, I don't think. It's not bad. Hannah, you say this all the time, it's not for me. I didn't hate it. My 8-year-old gave it it's pretty good. I liked it because of Matilda Lawler. The rest, most of it's fluff and just stuff, but she is so good, Hannah.
Well, you know, I read up, though, that she was on Broadway. She was in The Ferryman, which was a very well-received play on Broadway. So she made her debut in that play back, I think, about, 2 years ago, maybe, pre-pandemic for sure. And so she's cut her teeth on, you know, she's one to watch for sure in the future, because I thought she was just really able to pull off the sweet and the cynical and
holy unexpected occurrences.
Exactly. I loved it. And so to me, I disagree that it wouldn't be in the theaters. I think it could have played in the theaters, especially when you consider the lack of just family adventure, comedy, dramas that are out there. I think it might have done okay. And so it reminded me of like those sweet comedy adventure family films of the 1970s and 80s. And you talk about a departure from Silk Road. There's no high tech shenanigans going on at all in this film. It's mom types on an old manual typewriter with a stuck J key, and dad is, draws comic book characters. And so you don't see everybody running other than the vacuum cleaner. You don't really, you don't get any sense of this is still very much contained in a child's imagination kind of world. And I just thought that it was just very delightful. And so it was a breath of fresh air for me to just kind of watch this one, even though as you say, I'm certainly not the target demo. You know, this one is also, it's based on a Newbery award-winning book, Flora and Ulysses, The Illuminated Adventures. And it's by Kate DiCamillo, who actually also wrote the novel for Because of Winn-Dixie, which was turned into a movie back in 2005, a very sweet movie about a girl and her dog. So, you know, this is that, it's sort of, I think if you are a fan of her books and if you've read her books, then I think this is a really satisfying film adaptation to watch. But I know you had some issues with whether or not it would fly on the big screen to a wider audience with the neighbor kid who shows up as a supporting character.
There's a lot of supporting characters in this film, and everyone has their quirk. And the next door neighbor, who I don't even think even needs to exist, his name is William, not Billy. His name is William. And he's got this really fake British accent. He's played by Benjamin Evan Ainsworth. And his quirk is he wears these really dark, like John Lennon sunglasses, and he has hysterical blindness. He wasn't born blind. He didn't lose his eyesight. I guess he did, but he has hysterical blindness. He was so stressed that his mother sent him away to go live with, I don't know who that is, his aunt maybe?
I know.
And
he
wants to join in on these adventures, but he's, you know, I have hysterical blindness. It's so unnecessary.
But it's so cute. But at the same time, it's just, it's funny. You can't help but laugh. I mean, I did wonder whether there could potentially be some backlash, but it made me also think about whether it's written that way. I assume that this is a character in the book. I haven't read the actual Flora and Ulysses book.
But I could see this becoming like, not a cult classic, but one of those films like, you gotta see this because of such and such is in it. I mean, this is not, yes, they're B-listers, but Bobby Moynihan, Janine Garofalo, who's in it for like 90 seconds, was no business being in there. Yeah. Danny Putty, you know him from Community. He was Abed, Donald right. Glover's bestie. He's the animal control guy. Kate Micucci, she's funny. Just an on and on list of people in this film that you're like, what are you doing here? And they're obviously having a good time.
Well, but you also have two very good supporting actors as the parents. I mean, you've got Allison Hannigan, who from How I Met Your Mother and Buffy. That's where most people will recognize her from. And Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec. And
John Rolfe.
And he's also voice of Sonic the Sledgehog. That's a dark
every
version.
10-year-old in the country just went, what?
Sonic the Hedgehog. And, you know, and I think they're very suitably cast as Flora's parents.
Had any chemistry whatsoever?
No, but really? Their chemistry was sort of irrelevant. They're separated, you know, they're working through a rough patch. But the point is that they still are sort of that goofy kind of, they're that goofy set of parents that really did feel like a throwback to some of the old family comedy dramas. And so the point is that they come together to support Flora, you know, and her squirrel in the imagination, and whether or not Ulysses, the CGI squirrel, has superpowers, you know, becomes sort of an area of debate, whether he, you know, the animal control guy, I think, says he's rabid. And so that's why they want to capture this, this squirrel, and Flora's defending him as a superhero. I just thought that, I thought Hannigan and Schwartz were cute in their roles. But ultimately, as you said, I mean, this is Flora's film. and if you talk about wanting to just sort of see it, I can see going back or going forward in 10 years and going, oh my gosh, Matilda Lawler, where have we seen her before? And I hope that she continues to grow and get some good roles, because I definitely look forward to seeing more of her. And, you know, the kid who plays William, Benjamin Evan Ainsworth, I'm sorry, you might not have liked him, but I just thought, I just found him kind of cute, and I think he's got a future too. So I don't think we've seen the last of either of them, but Matilda for sure, you just want to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, I mean, if I had seen this however many weeks earlier, she would have gotten one of my Beth Youth Performing nominations for the awards. It's a very cute movie, kept my kids' attention. That's really all they're designed to do. And it's not a super, it is a superhero movie, but it's not like the Avengers.
No, not at all.
Okay, I saw Netflix offering this week. I don't believe you did. It's called I Care a Lot. And I was like, where have I heard this? It has a Golden Globe nomination, Hannah, for Best Actress in Comedy or Musical for Rosamund Pike. I was like, wow.
Is it really a comedy? I just watched the trailer.
if it is a comedy, it's the darkest, blackest comedy ever made. But we've seen Rosamund Pike do this before. You remember Amy Dunn in Gone Girl? Like, you don't want to hang around here. Something bad's going to happen. Well, she plays a very similar version of that character in I Care a Lot. She plays Marla, and Marla is, she's got a scam going on. She is a professional legal guardian. If you are a person of a certain age, and you are diagnosed with dementia, and you don't have any support family, you become, you're given over to a legal guardian, and they manage your assets, and when the time is right, they will put you in a home, in an assisted living facility, and sell your house, and take care of you that way, and they own you, they're your guardian. So she gets people declared mentally unfit who aren't because they are wealthy, but they have no family. And she gets them committed and she takes all of their money for herself. Eventually, she does that to the wrong person, Jennifer, played by Diane Wiest, who you don't see a lot anymore. Wiest. She's the wrong granny. She gets her committed against her will. And then her son comes calling, played by Peter Dinklage, who is a Russian mafioso. So maybe this is where the comedy comes in. They start destroying each other. This Roman mobster and Marla are both these type A, I don't lose personalities. Like, I'm not going to lose to you. And they, you know, tear each other apart and their lives fall apart. And I hated this movie. I know I'm in the minority. Mm-hmm. I think this is a miserable little film. There's no good guys. There's nobody to root for. I wanted them both to die. I loathed this movie. And I don't know why everyone's saying, you've got to see I Care a Lot. You're going to love Marla. How can you love Marla? She's mean and she has the world's worst scam. You've got to be just a dark soul, and I am a dark soul, to enjoy this
really
movie.
Darker than yours.
And this has a golden, like, this is another example of the corruptness of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, that this got a Golden Globe nomination. It's absurd, Hannah. I think not watch this movie.
Really? I guess maybe they really just like Rosamund Pike. And I like Rosamund Pike, and that's the only reason that I was thinking maybe I would check it out. And when I clicked on Netflix, you know, it's certainly there's, you know, a new offering. I decided not to watch it because I really just was like, you know what? It looks dark. It looks weird and twisty. And I just was like, I'm not really in the mood for that. So also in my face though, when I was looking at what Netflix had offering up, it triggered that trending was a series called Call My Agent, which I think then automatically has a theatrical application for us to discuss. But we were sort of clued in to Call My Agent by a director we spoke to a few weeks ago, Jamie Anderson. She talked about how this was one of her binge favorites, and I can see how that would be the case. Charlie, you absolutely should be watching Call My Agent. It's in French. Come on. It's in French with English subtitles. Thank
you
God.
You act like you know me.
but because it's in French with English subtitles, you actually can't really multitask. Unlike a lot of things where you'd be sort of watching Netflix comedy, sitcom.
I never multitask when I watch.
Exactly. Then this is one where you actually really had to kind of keep watching in order to read. But it just has the best actors. And I don't know if it's just because they're speaking French and it gives them a little more gravitas. But this is just it lasted four seasons and now all four seasons are on Netflix. It's sort of like Entourage, but in French. And it revolves around the hijinks of these senior and junior agents at a fictional talent agency in Paris. And they've got, you know, like their big movie star client. And apparently there are tons of cameos that will take place throughout the seasons where very prominent French actors do pop up. And so we're talking like, you know, these are, they represent like the Juliette Binoche or Isabelle Huppert of Paris. And so I've only watched the first one, but I can see where this could be my new weekend binge.
Is it a half hour or hour shows?
It actually is one of those ones where it's sort of like our podcast. It kind of goes all over the map with how long it runs.
Well,
so it's closer to an hour. They generally run, I believe, between 45 and 55 minutes.
I really liked Entourage. My wife and I have seen every single episode. I remember the Entourage movie. Big fan. I might check this. I needed a palate cleanser after I saw, was subjected to I Care a Lot. And I was like, I need a comedy, like something that makes me laugh. So apparently I am the last person ever to latch on to Schitt's Creek, which is also on Netflix. And it just won a basket full of Emmy Awards. And because of that, I was like, all right, fine. I'm not going to describe the plot or everything because everybody on earth probably knows of and about and why and who and how of Schitt's Creek. I watched the first two last night because I wanted my soul to cleanse. I'm on board. I'm going to carry this one through.
Yeah, I'm going to check. I still have to check out Schitt's Creek, but I think I'm going to watch a few more Call My Agents first. But I suggest when you're just looking for that something in the middle between comedy and drama and sitcom and hour-long show, this is really a good one to sort of just check out.
But this is a movie cast, so folks, yeah. I know you're not here for television, and you have to watch Nomadland. I know you might not want to. You have to watch Nomadland. It's not up to you. You have to.
You have to watch Nomadland to be in the know. You have to, you can skip Silk Road because you can skip Silk Road. Mm. Flora and Ulysses.
Only if you have
a child. If you have a 10-year-old, you should absolutely at least be turning this one on for them. Obviously, Charlie does not care very much.
I'm in the minority, so come at me. Tell me how wrong I got it, listeners. Like, how did you miss this? Da 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 da. Fine, come at me. I'll listen to you.
That's right. Charlie does not care a lot about I Care a Lot, and just sort of binge whatever you need as your own personal weekend cleanser, palate cleanser, and we're okay with that.
To get through the snow cone ice outside, watch something funny.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll leave you to it to watch something funny. In the meantime, that is a wrap for this edition of the Cinema Clash. Thanks for listening. As always, if you have a question, comment, want to vent to Charlie, shoot us a tweet or visit us at thecinemaclash.com. Till next time, wear a mask, watch your distance, wash those hands, and when it's your turn, please take the shot.
Thank you.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.